Hey, I just got back from lunch. Did you finish that report yet?
Not exactly. Still working on it. I'm not finished just yet. I got a little sidetracked, but I will get them to you first thing this afternoon.
It is first thing this afternoon.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but I mean, I am working
But
on it. I'll have
what do you mean that the report isn't finished yet?
I'm still in the process of working on it. I've just been a little distracted.
Distracted. Our meeting starts in an hour.
I can have it.
No. What were you doing? Were you listening to another hunting podcast again? I swear, I give the staff in this office the freedom to do whatever they want to do as long as they meet a deadline. That is the first bullet underneath your job description. Pays attention to detail and deadline. And deadline. Dude, are you even listening to me right now?
Welcome to episode 173 of the Whitetail Distraction Podcast. My name's Austin, and joining me in the podport, the garage of goodness, the...
That's all you have.
Yeah, man. Okay. Yeah, I
just
don't know.
It's just that. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah, okay.
I'm here. What's up?
What's up, kid?
How are we?
I'm good.
We're good.
I'm good.
Kyle's here.
Kyle Allen from A&F Custom Calls. What's up, buddy?
Oh, not much. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely, good to have you. Good to have you.
Absolutely. We are here. We're going to have some fun.
I'm going to switch it up a little bit when we do our taking care of business, and we're going to start off with A&F today.
Okay, perfect.
Let's hop right into that bad boy.
Talk about A&F. Kyle's here with us.
He is here with us. I want to spotlight the Hunter Series, you know, variety pack
right
today.
It's in our giveaway.
That's what we're giving away for the giveaway. We got it sitting here. Woo-hoo. Thank you, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic. You're the freaking man. Got a little bat wing in there.
Uh-huh.
Got a V cut.
Got one of each in there.
One of each.
Got a combo cut in there.
I would imagine. They're kind of like...
Look at
in one spot. Let
me. They're looking up. Good, man.
Those are fresh. I just made those this morning.
Oh,
off the press.
Hot off the press.
Yep. We got a batwing combo and a V cut.
Look at those bad boys.
Only three you need. I mean, actually, you can get that. You're going to have to pay. Once you get these, you're going to have to pay and get yourself a ghost cut, because that's my favorite call by far.
I have a really random question for you, and I've been wanting to ask you this for a while, and I just haven't. I wanted to ask you in person because I feel like this is an in-person question. Let's say you took a call and you didn't cut any of this, and then you basically superimposed a Batman symbol on there and you cut out just the Batman symbol. What would that bad boy sound like?
You'd probably choke.
I mean, that would kind of be like the Batwing.
It'd be like a Batwing, but it'd be like an actual Batwing.
Yeah, I don't know. That probably wouldn't.
When you blew it, would it just be like, I'm Batman. I'm Batman.
I think that's what it would do. It might work.
That was so stupid.
Yeah.
I had to throw that out there.
Have you really been saving that question for that long?
No, I just came up with that on the spot.
Okay.
It popped in my mind, and I was like, man, what if it was like a Batman symbol for the cut?
Yeah.
Like half of it. So it kind of looked like a combo cut, but it was Batman.
I mean,
like
if
Batman.
You flip the Batwing upside down, right? That's kind of pretty close. Isn't
pretty
it?
Close. I don't know.
That's like Wu-Tang at that point.
Wu-Tang.
Oh, it is like Wu-Tang.
Seems like that's the pretty start wild. Of it.
Yeah. See,
yeah, I don't even know how you would do that.
I don't either. He already told me I'd probably choke, so yeah. We're not going to do that.
That's true. So, Kyle, what's going on with A&F, man? I kind of went over some of the things we talked about the other day, but you want to highlight one of your favorite particulars?
Your rig's all good?
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother story. Hopefully I can shoot a shotgun this spring. Just coming off shoulder surgery. No, we're gonna have a new call coming out here soon for A&F Custom Calls, and I'm kind of excited about it. It's gonna be called the Honky Hen.
Ooh,
yeah,
I like that.
Add a little honk to your hen.
Okay.
Yeah. If you ever heard a hen in the woods, sometimes you'll hear it almost sounds like a goose.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to come up with a call that sounds like that, and I think I finally got it. I'm looking for that to come out here shortly, right?
Ooh,
before the season.
Okay. I'm excited for that. Right. You'll see an order from Austino over here.
Yeah. That'll be unique.
Yeah.
You will.
For sure. Separate you. That's what.
Because I know that every hunter has heard the hen I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and as soon as you hear the word honk, you know what that hen sounds like.
Yeah.
And it almost sounds like a guy sometimes. You're like, oh, that's a guy down in there. It's some old hen, just damn. Got a unique voice.
Yeah. I usually attribute the guy to the old box call bandit.
Oh, man. We all know that guy.
We've ran into that guy.
More than once. And in Ohio, more than once.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Unfortunately.
Another thing, I also just got a camera, so I'm going to start doing a little filming. I've never done it. I've hunted with Chad Claycomb and Claycomb mm-hmm. Outdoors, but
yep.
I feel like it's something I could add to the brand.
You Absolutely. Did enough turkey hunting. I think it makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Not even only turkey hunting, deer, bear.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Like to add it all in.
Yeah, I like that you're starting to post some of your videos, too, of you calling on your calls and kind of highlighting and showing how they can be ran.
Yeah. Yep.
That's awesome. We shared one the other day. And
yeah, it sounded nasty.
I love it, man. Like, some of your Lost 10 stuff, your Kiki runs, like, that's just so good. I've literally could not count how many turkeys I've seen killed over an A&F call. And I attribute it to, like, they are very unique sounding.
Oh, I ran out of fingers a while ago.
Yeah, yeah. I've ran out of fingers, toes, tongues, left ears, like, a long time ago counting in a season. And it's like, dude, they're just unique. Like, I've been sitting side by side with people running a different call. I'll call, get an answer, they won't. Like, I'll call a bird in, they won't. I don't know.
They're definitely a little different than I think you're going to find most places. One thing I should definitely point out is if you get a call, it's not going to sound the way you want it until you break it in.
You got to break them in.
You got to break them in. It's not, if you get a call out of the package and it sounds sweet, it's likely not going to sound sweet in about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, so definitely get a call that you have to break in. Be patient with it. You get a call for it. Me personally, and I didn't figure this out until I had thrown calls out. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound good. You know, and this was several years ago. But finally, after sitting there calling on the call for 25, 30 minutes, there was a noticeable difference in the sound of the latex. You know, I'm like, wow.
Definitely.
And then it holds there for an extended period of time. The latex will almost turn like a translucent color. It's dyed and everything. You know, the latexes are different colors, but you'll notice the latex will get translucent looking.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, that's when it's starting to break in.
Yeah, for sure. I've told everybody that. It's like people get them in their mouth and they're just, man, I can't get this sound. I'm like, just calm down, isn't it?
Keep running.
Keep playing with it.
It'll go.
I'm telling you, like, for me, I'll just pop it in here and there when I get a new one. And it's like, by the end of the week, me doing that, that thing is...
Oh, these bad boys are going to work with me tomorrow. I'm going to annoy everybody.
Yeah.
Good thing I work with one turkey hunter.
Yeah, there you go. I'm really...
Well, see, I work at home, and my wife works at home, so do you think I'm taking them to work?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Luckily, I'm working at home by myself, and I have plenty of time to just crank on that thing and annoy the shit out of the dogs.
Nice.
About it. I feel bad sometimes, because it just echoes through the house.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. A&F Custom Calls, go check him out. Kyle Allen is the man.
Okay, let's get back to it. We're gonna bang a couple of these out real quick, Kyle, and then we'll get into the other thing.
Scree gear.
Scray.
Just hopping on the outlet, I see all kinds of new stuff. They got the ptarmigan pants on there.
Oh yeah,
they got the Bridger glassing mitts and the grid lights on there now.
Ooh,
look at the price on that grid light.
Yeah, sub $100.
Looking schnazzy, man.
Uh-huh.
I love that. I have two of those.
Do you? I have two as well.
Yeah, they are super comfy.
I have
a solid
color, and I have... Oh, I'm lying to you. I have three of those.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I got two camos and a solid.
Yeah, the prices right now, guys, are unbelievable. Go check them out. They are an unbelievable company. The warranty is unprecedented. VIP sizing guarantee.
Yeah, I would say like for days like today, I threw the ptarmigan jacket in my back seat today, just going around trying to find some birds and stuff, and we got out, and I'm just wearing this hoodie, and I'm like, man, it's freaking cold out. Grab that thing, threw it on. We start driving around, and I'm just stripping it back off because it was so damn warm.
Oh, yeah. Yep, yep.
It's perfect for days like today, though. If you're going to be outside and it's cold like this, throw that thing on. You'll be fine.
WDP 20% off your first purchase.
There you go.
There you go. VIP archery.
VIP.
Oh, what you got there?
Highlighting the combat vet again, man.
Okay.
It's just hard to get away from this bad boy. I know you've been running the Commander a little bit recently, but yeah, I can't get away from that combat vet.
I still got him. Don't worry.
Unbelievable broadhead for $30, man.
I'm going to get me probably three new ones this year.
I am too. I am too.
I got to re-up on some for sure. And I got a bunch of replacement blades too, though I haven't used at all.
Yeah. I mean.
You really run into very few situations where you need them.
Yeah, I would totally agree.
That's nice about them.
The one thing that I have to highlight about these broadheads, I mean, it's just, I say it every week. Freddy Krueger blood,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
Unreal. Made in America by veterans. Oh, man. How can you complain about that?
if you're un-American, that's all.
Yeah, if you're communist or ISIS.
Well, what you got there? Back 40 Seco.
Back 40 Seco. And I wanted to kind of like spotlight the Clover blend a little bit, the B40 Clover blend.
Okay. I like it.
Three different kinds of clovers in there. It's anchored by Ladino clover. Unreal stuff, man.
Yeah. I mean, clover is king, right?
Clover is king. That's the biggest thing.
I love it. I put clover in everywhere, basically.
If you're into frost seeding, now's the time to start getting your stuff and getting it out there.
Tonight would have been ideal.
It would have.
Tomorrow it's supposed to warm up about 60 degrees. Tonight it's probably in the 20s. Tonight would have been ideal.
I would agree.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. If you missed it, just do the extra work in the spring and get some.
Absolutely. And we will be doing our drawing this week, I believe.
Oh, shit. When is that? Wow. Is that this episode? Well, technically, it's supposed to be on this episode. Yeah, we're not prepared for that.
No.
But we'll drop it.
We'll draw it on Thursday, I believe. For Friday. Thursday?
Well, no, we're drawing on Friday.
We're drawing on Friday? Okay. Yes. Well, we'll draw it on Friday. It'll be great.
We'll draw the winners on Friday.
And that's it for business.
That snuck up on me.
It did.
Where's the days go?
I don't know. It's almost turkey season, though. That's always a good thing.
Well, that's why Kyle's here.
That is why Kyle's here.
Yeah. He's our turkey guy.
Resident Another turkey guy.
Another turkey. Well, he was. He moved away and went to the land of big deer and shit.
That's true.
The flat.
The flat.
As I call it.
Yeah. It probably is super flat out there, huh?
I bought the only cliff in the whole county.
Yeah.
Nice.
I tease my wife. I say, it's really flat over here than what I'm used to. It's not that flat. There's a hill.
Flatlander.
That's funny.
Well, what's up, man? What's new?
Just had shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
Made sure that I had that done in time for spring turkey.
Yeah, what do you think? If you can't shoot a shotgun, what are you going to do? You can learn
I got another shoulder. Yeah.
I was going to say, you can learn lefty. Yeah.
So, I got a 410 you can shoot.
Well, I'm using a 20 gauge. I just bought a 20 gauge last year.
Yeah.
And that should be fine, I think. If I need to, it shouldn't be hard to shoot.
I went out with a friend of mine 2 years ago, right after his shoulder, and he probably shouldn't have been shooting on that shoulder, but he did. He shot a bird in front of me with it. He said it hurt like hell, but it was worth every second.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, he was post-op, but what he was thinking about was the same thing. He was going to try to either do a couple things. One, try to shoot left-handed, or two, he was going to switch to like a crossbow or something and try to shoot him that way, which, you know, is what it is. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't want to be in that predicament.
Shooting with a crossbow is really hard. You mean, especially if you're hunting in PA in the woods, if you're not hunting in a field, you got to worry about little saplings and stuff, which, you know, you're shooting a shotgun, you got 300 BBs going downrange, not one arrow.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I've shot at a bird one time left-handed when I thought I was better than I was, and I missed 100%. Mm-hmm. That bird was probably a lot farther away. The weird thing was, like, if you don't practice, you really don't know how to aim. Just think about trying to aim with your left eye instead of your right eye, and then you're here, and then you're the trigger pull with your left hand compared to your right. Like, you're a lot more ambidextrous.
Yeah.
Like, you hit left-handed, you threw right-handed, right? You can do a little bit of both, obviously, way better than I can. I'm very right-handed, strong, dominant, other than playing pool. It's the only thing I do left-handed.
Because I throw left-handed and I hit right-handed.
Yeah.
Well,
that's uncommon. Well, that's not that uncommon. Izzo did that.
I bat left, golf right, play hockey left.
Yeah.
Throw right.
That doesn't make any sense.
Interesting.
Not that I play hockey, but when I was little, right. I used left-handed stick.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's weird.
Super different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so weird. So, like, for you, I'm guessing you could pick up on it a lot quicker.
Well, that, and I'm shooting a pattern that's, you know, probably 14 inches, which will help your aim anyway.
Yeah, so. True. What are you running for shells these days? Are you shooting the TSS? Are you on the TSS train?
I did out of the 20 gauge.
Yeah.
Out of the 12 gauge, I just run number fours.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably going to be joining you there with the 20 gauge action. I've been looking at a single shot 20 gauge for a while now, and I'm probably going to run the Federal TSS out of it. What do you use, that shot number nines or because
seven? I use seven.
Okay, so they had sevens on sale, and I was gonna go with that.
They do blends too. I mean, it depends on where you get them from. They have sevens, they have eights, they have nine and a halves. It really depends on what your gun like.
I was gonna go with the seven.
If the doctor says I can, I would like to use my 12 gauge because this will be the fifth grand slam I get, and I'd love to use one of the shells my grandpa gave me. You probably don't remember them, the old Actives.
Oh, like
it was a plastic hull.
Mm-hmm. Was there?
And I have four left. The very first longbeard I ever killed when I was 12, I used one of those shells. He gave me five of them. So I got four left.
What color is it?
It's red. It's just a whole red. Yep.
Is it a high brass?
There's no brass. It's a whole. It's just one solid piece of plastic.
No, I don't know what you're talking about then.
Yeah, Kent Cartridge bought them out, and they own the patent, but they don't sell. So the thing with actives was, in a 3-inch shell, you had 2.25 ounces of shot. Wow. So nobody else was doing that.
That's a 3.5 shell now.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But this was in a 3-inch shell. So back in the 90s, my dad and my great uncle and all them guys, that's all they used was actives.
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't shoot 3.5 back then, right? Guns couldn't hold.
Yeah. No, they didn't have like a 3.5.
Most of those guns back then were 2.75.
Maybe a 10 gauge was 3.5. Maybe.
I don't even know if
they were.
I think.
Yeah. 10 gauges, maybe. I'm pretty sure. Not initially.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That is pretty wild.
But anyway, I'd like to use one of them.
Yeah.
If I could use my 1187, mm-hmm. I will, but I don't know if my shoulder is going to permit that.
It might not like it. He's going to be angry.
That shit will beat you up for sure. You don't want to have to redo that again.
Right.
But I mean, in the bad part is you did your labrum, which is like...
Well, the labrum, they actually told me the labrum's the best thing, especially since I want to get back to playing baseball.
Right.
Recreationally, they said labrum is the best thing you could have done. Cool. But I couldn't pull my... I bought a longbow last summer. And I had intentions of practicing all summer and learning how to shoot it and then hunting with it. I shot 10 shots, and by the 11th, I couldn't even pull the bow.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I knew something was wrong, so then I waited until this January and saw the surgeon and...
Got it chopped up.
Yep. We're all fixed.
We're all fixed.
You have to let me know how that goes overall, because, man, I've been really contemplating for about 5 years.
Yeah, you've needed to.
I screwed mine up. Junior year of college.
I remember that.
Yep. Bad. It hasn't been the since. And then the doctor then told me it'll never be good again until you get it fixed.
Yeah. Whatever. You can live with it, but
yeah.
Maybe think about that.
The last like 3 nights I've been trying to sleep and it's just been painful for no reason at all. Because it's baseball season again, so you're starting to get a little more active with it and swinging the bat, and it's like you know, trying to play softball and do all the things. Dude, trying to change a light bulb is probably the most freaking taxing task you can do with a labrum.
Unbelievable, man. Dude,
trying to get above the shoulder. Like, when I raise my arm, it stops right here.
Yeah.
It will not go higher until I pop it like that and get it up higher. But it's just...
That's that bad. Wow.
Is your shit grinding?
It was. There was cartilage in there, though. He sucked out. So that was probably the grinding.
Yeah.
He's a Dyson.
I wasn't there mentally.
Yeah, your physical being was there, but you weren't there. Yeah.
Oh man.
All right, we'll get back on track. We got to talk some turkey. So you mentioned the Grand Slam as well. You're talking about your 5th Grand Slam. For those that don't know, that's a Pennsylvania Grand Slam as well, right, Kyle?
Yep, that's a fall turkey, a buck, a bear, and a spring turkey.
Not easy thing to accomplish.
No.
In our state, there's a reason they call it the Grand Slam. It's very difficult. I mean, you're one of the only people I know that have done multiple. Dude, it's impressive.
Well, I can't say I haven't had a lot of help along the way. I mean, I think for the animals I've killed, I was probably alone maybe 2 or 3 times, mm-hmm. you know. And even after I killed it, I always had help getting it out, you know, or, you know, someone sitting behind me calling or, you know, something.
Yeah.
This year was a lot of fun, especially the bear hunt was probably hands down the best bear hunt I was ever on.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
I feel like that's got to be the most difficult part of it, too.
Yeah, I think the biggest tip, I think, with bear hunting is you yourself need to just start tracking bear. You know, we were hunting with a huge group of guys, and, you know, my brother and I, or another younger guy, we were always the first to volunteer our efforts to track the bear if there was snow. And you would be astonished what those animals walk through. It doesn't make any sense, like, why they walk some of the places, but, you know, a few times, at least 3 of the bear, I was positioned where probably 90% of the hunters would not be.
Really?
Because you can only see 30 yards.
Right.
You know, one way or another. But if you think the bear is going to travel through there, that's your best bet to stand.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that was the biggest learning with bear. Because the way we hunt is not, you know, find the sign. you know, in rifle season, bears are very nomadic where we hunt. They're not coming out to a cornfield. They're not going out to a farm. Yeah. They're just roaming through the woods looking for cover for when it gets cold, or they're looking for food.
Because there's no baiting. No. We're not allowed to do any of that here. So
yeah. End of November, middle of November, the food gets scarce at that point. So they become very nomadic. So the style of hunting is not just sit on the food source, you know? So,
right.
Yeah. Learning how to find where the bear are traveling through was the number one thing I've learned for bear.
Hmm.
If you had to compare it to a deer, I mean, just night and day difference, or what are we looking at?
As far as
how they're traveling,
how they're using.
You said that like it would like blow your mind with the stuff that they're going through.
Well, I think more of when they're jumped.
Okay.
Hmm.
I'm speaking more on once we've got them going.
Yeah.
You know, they want to head for, they don't want to be seen.
Yeah.
Like if you think you're going to sit on this hillside where you can see 200 or 300 yards.
It's not happening.
It happened one time, but more times than not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They want to stay hidden, and they can, you'll hear a bear before you see a bear.
Really?
If you're where they're coming to, they don't care. They just run through it.
Bulldozing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense to me. I mean, I've only been bear hunting a few times, on one successful one, but other than that, I have never really got into bear hunting. I don't know what I would do with a bear.
Me neither.
They taste probably 2 times better than a deer.
I've eaten bear several times, but like, I mean,
I've had good bear and I've had bad bear.
I would want to get a rug or something like that. I don't have any room for like a full body mount.
That's what I just got mine soft.
Yeah.
Because I mean, if you think about it, if you pay $1,500 for 5 bear, that's a lot of money.
Absolutely.
So I just, you know, a few $100, I got them soft hand.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, I think so too.
But getting back to the taste. So where I live now is like deer country.
Oh, yeah.
Deer hunters, deer, they love deer. And I had a plate of deer steaks, backstraps, and bear backstraps. Which do you think were gone first?
Really?
Yeah. It wasn't even close.
That's wild.
Yeah. You must suck at cooking deer. That's the only thing
I cooked them the same.
Maybe that's part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you've killed enough bear to eat them.
Yeah, that's fair. I've eaten bear from the best wild game cook on this planet, and it was absolutely freaking fantastic.
Yeah.
I've heard from a bunch of people.
No, it was just all put together in like this barbecue slow roast type deal. I don't even know what I was eating, but I know it was bear.
And it was good.
It was really, really good. And then I've had bear buddies that cooked them and overcooked the absolute piss out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
and
terrible.
By the time I got to it, it was dry and terrible, just like a dry deer would be, you know?
Same I think there's a fine line.
Geese.
Yeah, same
they,
thing.
They say that they're like flying livers and stuff like that. But if you cook them right, they're fantastic.
I think that's the thing with wild game is there's too much room for error with cooking it. You know, so you could talk to one person. They say, I had it before, but it was terrible. For instance, I ate a muskrat, and I didn't know it until after I ate it, and the guys told us what we were eating, and I was like, tasted like a squirrel almost, you know, it wasn't.
I will tell you, I have skinned hundreds of muskrats, and the meat looks tremendous. It always wasn't bad. Does.
I mean,
it always does.
Yeah, I've never had muskrat.
It's super lean. Dude, it is bright red. It looks awesome every time I've skinned one.
My whole thing, and I'm with you on that, Kyle, like, the people that will tell me it's disgusting. Okay, whose deer did you have? Because the one person I know, I've had their brother's cooking, and their wild game was absolutely disgusting.
Well, you also get people to say, hey, try my sausage, and you look and it looks like coyote crap because there's hair all through it. You know?
That's what I mean. Like,
oh, man.
Not everything is processed equally, and that goes a long way towards the taste. You know, I mean, I can age something, dry age a backstrap for 14 days and feed it to you. And you're like, oh, my God, this is the most tender thing I've ever had. Well, yeah, if you have someone else that shoots one and they're in their freezer that same night, it's not going to taste as good. Just not. So, like, the whole processing part is it's key. And I'm not against bear. I think bear is absolutely delicious. I would love to have some, honestly.
You know, it was interesting. The one bear I shot, and then getting back to the flavor, it all depends what the bear eats, too. If it's eating trash, it's probably not going to taste as good as a bear that's eating berries and foraging. The one bear I shot had been shot twice.
Oh, wow.
It was shot in the face with a .22.
Oh, man.
Right between the eyes. I have the skull, and there's a hole right between the eyes. And that same bear had a bunch of 7-shot or 8-shot all in the hind quarter. So it must have been getting into someone's trash or a bird feeder at someone's camp. There's no farms or anything around, so it was obviously getting into someone's trash or something.
They peppered it.
Yeah. They definitely did.
Yeah.
Listen, I can believe it. We had a bear up our camp one time that would literally just come in and...
That's a big bear if it's the one I'm thinking of.
It would just hang out in the backyard and like it wasn't even really afraid of humans. You'd scare it off, it'd come right back in. And like we'd be hanging deer and stuff. And the one got up, that bear one time got up and actually took the deer out of the tree and ate half of it that was hanging up in a tree. Like that bear was not afraid of people. He's been around. Somebody was somewhere was feeding that bear and he got pretty comfortable coming around people to be 50 yards away and just sitting there looking at you. Like, it's kind of disturbing, you know?
Yeah, a little bit.
An animal that big. But, I mean, goes a long way, like you said, what they eat. Think about grizzlies. Like, there's a lot of people that just won't eat grizzly because of what they eat and their habitat and everything.
You got to eat those inland bears, those coastal bears that are eating all that nasty salmon all the time.
All the dead rotten fish and shit.
Yeah, those are the ones that they say are pretty gnarly.
So.
Although, I don't know. My grandpa... he shot one on Kodiak Island. That's a coastal bear. They ate that bear. They said it was awesome. So, I don't know.
You talk about a wild hunt. I think that would probably be the most intense hunt is to hunt one of those with a bow.
Yeah. I don't want to do that.
He shot that one with a .375 H&H.
Probably 100 yards.
That one down, man. It was a big bear, too.
That's awesome. Yeah, I would love to. I don't know. I've never really gotten into the bear hunting stuff. Kind of with Austin, I've gone like once or twice with rifle. I've seen them in archery season, but they weren't in yet. I've got them at the base of my tree.
If you're deer hunting for bear, you're not going to have as much success. It's a totally different style of hunting. And I think that's where it's a lot of people's downside. They think that they're going to have the same luck as someone sitting in the woods on opening day of deer gun season. Mm-hmm. You're just going to have a buck come running by. Well, they're going to have a bear come running by. It's possible. But if you're going to do that, you need to hunt around places where you know people are going to push thickets and stuff.
Right. Absolutely.
Other than that, to see a bear just aimlessly walking through the woods at that time of year, you got luck. Like you're getting lucky doing that.
Yeah. It happens every year, but it's a numbers game at that point.
Right, it is. I mean, it's definitely possible. It's not impossible.
But it's not. If you wanted to kill a bear archery season.
You're increasing your odds if you hunt with a group of guys.
Yes.
No doubt. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it every year when we go up to the camp and it's beginning archery season here and bear's not in yet. Like the first day this year, I had 4 bears walk past me at 20 yards this year. Mama and 3 big ass cubs. And scared the living piss out of me, mind you.
You were on the ground.
I was on the ground hunting. Yeah, in a slash. And they walked right past. It was unnerving. But like you'll see them and we'll have encounters. Like we saw like 6 bears that day between all of our group. And you'll see him, and then all of a sudden, it's like bear season comes in. It's like
gone.
You don't see him anymore.
No. Once the food is gone, they have no reason to be walking around the way they, they're trying to conserve fats, conserve energy. So they're moving.
Yeah. That and like people are starting to disturb the habitat. People are in there hunting. They're leaving a lot of scent. Bears pick up on that shit and don't deal with it anywhere near as much as like deer.
It's kind of like Kyle said, too. They're super nomadic, too. It's not like they have. I mean, I'm sure they do have sort of a core range at some point, but
their core range, I believe, is miles.
It's huge.
I'm telling you, I've tracked so many bear, and I've covered 10 or 11 miles in a day. Mm-hmm. It probably took me 2 or 3 miles to jump it.
Yeah,
and once I jump it, it just checks out, and like guys are trying to get out in front of.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, hey, really nice hard hitting bear talk, but. Let's move on.
No, it's interesting because we haven't had any real bear talk on here yet.
No, you're right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Pretty good. So you're after the Grand Slam. You've gotten your bear. You got your buck. You have your fall turkey. Now you get a spring turkey.
Yep.
How you do it? Up to camp.
Oh, you know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife's going out of town, of course, for 2 weeks in May.
Wow.
So
you're a lucky man.
Well, I have a son.
And all those
10 months old. Yeah. We're going to be, he'll be 11 months in May. So
that kid has grandparents, dude.
Well, that's what Grandma Lori's going to be watching him at camp.
There you go.
I'm going to go out and hopefully get my fifth Grand Slam.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got the camera because I think it's going to be, you know, it's pretty special because, you know, I got my grandpa still coming up to camp and hunting, actively hunting. Mm-hmm. I got my dad, my brothers, and now I could have my son up there and, you know, just to share it with, you know, that memory with everyone. Cause
absolutely.
I've been, you know, like I said, I was with most of the, or all these guys for, you know, different stages of all these Grand Slam hunts. Mm-hmm. So it'll be cool to capture it all.
Bring the generations together.
Exactly.
That. Yep. Yeah. That's going to be freaking badass, especially with like your grandpa there, like you said. And if you guys haven't seen him on some of the hunts with Kyle and Chad, those are some of my favorites.
You know what? This fall, I saw, and if someone told me this story, there's no way I'd believe it. But we were fall turkey hunting, and I saw this flock cross one of these Gaswell roads. So my dad had my dog.
Lloyd.
Lloyd, the turkey dog.
Yeah.
So we go, I send Lloyd up in there and he busts them up and they come running out. Well, grandpa's standing on the one, it's like these, you can shoot down these roads. They're not forest road or Gaswell road. So grandpa's standing there with my dad and I'm standing down another end to see if they come this way. And I know my grandpa's going to shoot one on the jump here. So I'm watching him. And my dad sees the turkeys come out on the road. And my grandpa's looking at the GPS trying to see where the dog's at. And my dad goes, "They're right there on the road. Shoot them." Grandpa puts the GPS, lets the GPS fall, and he looks up, and he's got this long-ass 1100. You know those old 1100s, 3-inch mag only? So this gun's like 30-some inches long. And he pulls the gun up, and he shoots again. And then I see him like scurry down this trail. And my dad turns down to me, and he goes, "He just shot this effing turkey at 100 yards. And I'm like, "There's no way." You know, I'm thinking maybe it's like 50 or 60 yards. So I get down to where they were standing, and I have a rangefinder in my pocket. Guess how far away he was?
82.
94 yards.
Whoa!
He was using a 3-inch mag, number 4 lead, and he killed it. And if someone told me that story, I'd tell them they were full of it. But I was there and witnessed it, and it was the most remarkable thing. And what made it even funnier was he always tells this story about how he shot this bird at 90-some steps back in, like, the late 80s or early 90s.
No.
And it was always just, you know, this mythical tale.
Yeah.
And I freaking witnessed it this fall, and I was like, that's unbelievable.
Dude, that's that 30-plus inch barrel, man. That's
like, I don't know.
Yeah.
He must have been aimed high on that second shot because it was remarkable.
Did he stone it or did it just like...
Yeah, it was dead.
No kidding.
I walked down there and there was a BB through the eyeball.
Huh. That's wild.
Did he, did he even know what the range was? Like, he had any idea? He just saw
turkeys. He knew that gun could do that, apparently.
He knew there was a turkey there and he just plastered it. My man, that's awesome.
I mean, his vision ain't like you and I's, so
100%,
but he knew it was a turkey and he's a good hunter and he knew that,
saw it on the
hey,
road.
I could probably get that at that range.
Jesus.
That's wild.
That's real.
I've killed him there before. I could do it again. That's probably what he said.
That's what he did. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty sweet. And I actually videoed it. I got my phone out and I stepped it off and you can watch me step it off and he's holding the turkey and the turkey's flopping and yeah, it was sweet.
That's awesome. Good for him, man.
Yeah. What a madman. What an absolute madman.
Yeah, like you said, though, like with the hunts with Chad, though, I mean, we've got some great videos on Chad's channel with my grandpa and the gun.
Yeah,
for some of the best, you know, whenever I hunt with Chad, we can never get the turkey on film. Like, I'm always shooting it when the turkey ain't in frame or he ain't zoomed in yet, but grandpa's a little more patient than I am.
You had that bent barrel that year too, also in a row.
Which year?
I said year or two. Okay, I was giving you the benefit.
Why do you think I bought a new gun?
Damn barrel's bent, dude.
Damn barrel's bent. What'd you end up getting, man? You said you got a 20 gauge.
Yeah, I got a Stoger.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a little Stoger.
30-20?
Yeah, I think that's
there. There you go.
Yeah.
It's a great gun.
It is. It's nice and light.
Yeah.
That 1187 I got, you know, I picked it up the other day and it's substantially heavier.
Oh, yeah, it would be. Yeah.
And especially if I'm going to start trying to film a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure my back and shoulders are going to appreciate the lighter gun.
Yeah. Weight savings are huge when you're trying to film. There's nothing, especially like, there's really nothing worse than carrying a damn camera around with you a lot of times because that shit gets heavy. But then you have a heavy gun on the other side. It's like,
well, I'm sure too. It's going to change the way I hunt. You know, I'm used to just, I'm pretty much go where I need to go now. And you're not going to be able to do that if you got to fold up a tripod and change batteries out and change cards or,
Do you watch any of the Bayside Legion? Yeah. So I would recommend watching them guys because they're on the go turkey hunters, that film.
Yeah.
And dude, like 8 out of 10 times, they're leaving the big camera there at the tree, filming them. They got the GoPro on their shoulder and a gun camera and they just go.
Yeah.
They leave and they go and they kill the bird. And if they get it on the gun camera, great. If not, they don't care. They're just,
well, that's going to be the whole premise of whatever I'm filming. I'm going to show you what's raw. Like I'm not going to probably edit out the swear words. Like I'll have a parental advisory, but I'm going to show how we're hunting in its most raw form. Like, because the way our camp hunts, you know, it's more or less about the camaraderie than it is the size of whatever you kill. Sure, we're thrilled if we kill a, you know, you shoot a 130 inch buck, you're going to be thrilled.
Right.
But if you shoot a 100 inch buck, those guys and you are going to be all as excited at our camp. Like when we come out of the woods, if you don't kill something, when you get service, you're hoping for a text that says, hey, I got one down. I need help.
Right.
Like that's what what we're all up there for. So that's what I'm hoping to showcase with what I'm going to film is just, you know, our successes and the way we're hunting and the fun we're having hunting.
Biggest thing I can say about carrying a camera, if you commit to it, just take it. Even those days that suck, man.
Yeah. I know
that's
coming.
Take that bad boy and do it because you're going to come to a point where you're just going to be like, I just want to hunt.
Yep.
Just take it and set it up anyway.
F this camera, especially like it's even worse for deer hunting. Like,
oh, it's way worse.
You're up in a tree. Let me get all this. I have all this extra weight. You climb the tree. Let me get it on. I have to wrap it around the tree. I got to mount it, level it, all that bullshit. Yep. A lot of times you don't want to do that or time doesn't permit you to do it.
You're running late that day or whatever. And you're like, I'm just going to hunt. I'm not even going to worry about it. That's going to be the best hunt of the season.
I've fallen into that more than I could even count.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you just commit to it because you've already invested your money into the camera.
Yeah.
And the equipment. So why not just take the extra time? Just and that's going to be the hard. I know that's going to be hard for me, too.
Mm-hmm. It's hard for everybody. Yeah.
You'll see.
And then when you get back to camp, instead of, you know, going to lay down, you're gonna have to take all your stuff out,
the charger, dump that card.
I've watched Chad do it so many years here at the camp that I know what I'm in for. And hopefully, you know, I'm not gonna quit doing the thing with Chad here, you know, in the middle of May that we do, so hopefully it can just add more to it.
Perfect.
Absolutely.
That'd be awesome.
Oh,
I can't wait to see some of that stuff. That's gonna be good.
That should be fun, man.
I'm excited for it.
I'm excited that turkey season is the first season with.
I know. Well, I mean, it's only fitting. Like back in the, I don't know, early mid 2000s, I used to have my parents just drop me off where we had permission to go. And I used to just go listen and film turkeys with their camera. Like I used to just call them in and listen to them. And I used to wake up super early and have them drop me off. And I used to just go listen to turkeys.
Yeah.
And I'm sure my mom thought I was weird as hell for asking her, but that's what I used to love to do. I loved turkeys and listening to them and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was, I think it is fitting that, starting filming would be of the turkeys.
Yeah, absolutely. Full circle.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
I gotta be honest. I'm surprised you haven't done it like up until now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't know. It's just, we've been so focused on the camaraderie and hunting as a group and putting our efforts into actually getting things.
For sure.
And now that we've had this, like now, I shouldn't say we, I should speak for myself. Now that I've had the success I've had, I think that I'd like to capture my success and my family and friends' success.
Yeah.
So if I get something, I want to tag along with one of them and film their hunt.
Yeah. Right.
You know? So yeah, like you said, I am surprised I haven't had the urge to, but all of a sudden I've felt this desire to want to do that.
Yeah, I like it, man. I mean, I think it's going to turn out great. I just, in the back of my mind, like, especially with that camaraderie, I'm just thinking, like, I would want to have that. And now you're starting and you're going to have it. And it's going to be awesome. You're going to be able to show your son. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be great.
You know what I think really hooked me? And I don't think my dad even knows this, but he showed us this. He used to take this VHS recorder
Humongous.
Yeah. And back in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, he and my great uncle and a bunch of other relatives used to stay at a camp, and they used to take a week off and spring turkey hunt. Much like what I do now with my dad and great uncle, same great uncle, and my grandpa, and, you know, but they used to do this back in the 90s. And one, you know, every time he'd go up there, he would have this VHS camera, and he would just record the interactions at the camp.
He would just
leave it running. And, you know, those are some of the best, you know, videos that we have is we never filmed hunts, but he used to just film what was going on at the camp.
Guys coming back in and whatnot.
Shooting guns and, you know, just BSing around the fire, having a few beers in the middle of the day, because you can only hunt till noon. So then you just get back to the camp and whether you want to go trout fishing or whatever. But watching some of that and watching them go scouting, listening for birds and stuff, they would take that VHS camera. Like, that was pretty cool. And I think seeing that when I think I was 11 years old or 12 years old, like, that was kind of like, it put you in a good mentality, I think, to see what your future of hunting could be.
Totally. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be great, man.
Yeah.
Like, I understand what you're saying too. Like, whenever you get into that camaraderie and, like, there's so many times it's like, man, I should have recorded that, or I should have done that, yep. You know, but some of the best moments that you want to relive, especially with family,
yep,
is out hunting. And if you don't record it, that just becomes a memory in your own head.
It's a tale that you'll tell. You're going to have that story, and that story is going to get told every year at camp, or, you know, every other year at camp. But now that you say that, after I killed this bear this year, I know we're getting back to bear, I had the wherewithal to pull my phone out. And as soon as I shot the bear and it went down, I pulled my phone out and recorded from that point until we walked down to the bear.
So you got it's like an eight minute.
So you got, you know, me standing there, the bear does the death moan, and then I'm standing there and you can hear, you know, us talking on the radio. I say, bear's down. And then my dad comes walking down the road and you get the interaction with me and him high-fiving and stuff. And then we're waiting on my grandpa and my little brother to come walking down the road. You get that interaction. You know, you're talking and high-fiving and everything. And then you walk down to the bear. You see, you just captured all of that would have totally been lost. Mm-hmm. You know, probably wouldn't have thought about unless you had it on film.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, those interactions, those little things that you don't realize how much they mean to you until you play them back. And you're like, man, that's
pretty sweet.
Pretty freaking awesome.
Because every now and then I'll pull that video out. And I just, it's just cool to watch.
Absolutely. Yep.
And, you know, like my son and my nephews, like, they're only going to get so many years with their great grandpa.
Right.
So I'd like to capture moments for them to see now of what my grandpa was doing, you know, hunting wise at this stage. I think that'd be cool for them to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it would be awesome for them to see. And you're also, you know, you're imprinting on them kind of that family tradition, that full circle, you know, and now they can have something they can look forward to, what they can do with their grandfather.
Yep.
And dad. You know, potentially brothers, cousins, whoever. You know what I mean?
And that's what hunting should be all about.
100%. 100%. It's all leads back to what we've been saying from the beginning. What this whole podcast has been built upon was the hunting tradition in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
The camp style, campfire style, I should say. Topics of talking around a campfire, BSing with friends, family. Like, our camps are amazing. I love that. Talking about the turkey camp we're coming up with here in a little bit in West Virginia with our Patreon members. That shit's about to be insane.
It's going to be wild. I guarantee it.
So much fun, dude. Like, so much fun, because we bring that camp traditional, you know, feel to it wherever we go, whatever we do, because we grew up with it.
Yep.
We're fortunate to have that, you know?
And there's guys there that never killed a bird. I mean, if they kill a bird, that's going to be... Dude.
We had a couple
celebration, man. I mean, I can't wait for that.
That was, I know we're getting back to the bear thing, but the way it is at our camp, you know, we had some guys that hadn't got a bear. So, like, you know, when they finally got one, it was like, you know, they were thrilled.
Oh, yeah.
They got a bear. We were thrilled for them. So then, you know, the stories that night, you know, you just keep rehashing the same hunt over and over that night.
Totally.
And it's a lot of fun. And I don't think enough people get to.
You can correlate that to everything. I mean, even if it's just deer camp, you got somebody up there, a new hunter, and they shoot their first deer. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're just ecstatic, and everybody's ecstatic for them. I mean, that's...
Yeah. And that's the thing, though. You keep going back to bear because it's all relevant. Think about your bear camps. And you guys, like, you kill bear.
something you guys really serious. Enjoy.
Like
too.
I know a lot of bear camps are, you know,
they're more drinking it's a and partying.
Exactly,
100%.
Don't get me wrong, we will drink and we will party, but if you don't wake up, Grandpa is going to be on. Mm-hmm. You know? So you better be up. And most of the times, if there's snow, we're up at 3:30 looking for tracks.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're pretty serious about our bear hunting.
Yeah. But it is probably one of the most like camaraderie type hunts you can do. Like it really is. Deer hunting. Yeah, you can hunt together in deer and you can do drives and stuff. And it's
hard to fun, do. It's hard to do drives because there's so many people in the woods the first day, first weekend of deer season.
Yeah.
There's not as many hunters in bear season. Like, let's face it. I mean, not everyone's buying a bear tag.
No, you have.
Not everyone has vacation to take off to bear hunt.
Yep.
So.
And you have the timing of it. It's right after the holiday. You know, it's right there. Like, yeah, it's. There's usually groups, big groups, right? And that's what I'm talking about. You have big groups, bunch of guys, big camps, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Bear camp's just different.
It is. It is. And I think Pennsylvania doesn't get enough publicity for their bear season. Like it's probably one of the best seasons there are in the state, you know, is that rifle week, you know, and that's how it used to be before the muzzleloader, before the archery. You used to have 3 days to kill a bear.
Yeah.
That's it.
If you killed a bear during those 3 days, you did something.
Yeah, seriously.
So, you know what? I'm going to dive back into this topic because we wanted to get in pressing some buttons and some, some topics. How do you feel about the muzzleloader bear season as a serious?
So what do you mean? Hunter. Can you rephrase? How do you feel about it?
How do you
like,
feel
what
about
are your
it?
Opinions on?
Are you for it? Are you against it? What's the pros and cons of that season?
The pros are you're adding opportunity for people to hunt.
Yeah.
I think anytime you can add opportunity, it's a good thing for hunters.
What about the animal?
But making things easier for hunters is not always a good thing. And I think with the early season, I've never hunted it. My dad and grandpa and my brothers and good buddy, they hunt it. But I don't take the time off because I take a week in fall turkey season to hunt. And I take a week in bear and I take deer season. So I choose not to take vacation that week.
Yeah.
But it's a great time to find where bear are feeding. So it definitely makes it easier for a solo hunter to go find and pattern where the bear are and kill it, which will make it obviously easier than hunting a nomadic bear.
Yeah. And then, I mean, to add on to that too, like, yeah, it's a muzzleloader season, but your grandpa can use a high power rifle.
And he does.
Yeah. He's a senior hunter.
Yep.
So now he's extended 3 days of being able to hunt bear to what, another week, right? That season's a week long.
Something like that.
Yep. Yeah, it's a week long, but I don't know if he can use the rifle every day or is it only the last few days?
No, it's
every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I shouldn't say I have an opinion whether it stays or goes one way or another, but I do think that it has an effect. I mean, you definitely are going to have less bear come rifle season due to people finding the food source.
Yeah, have you seen the numbers of harvests since they've added that season?
Yeah, it's decreased. And I, you know, there was a biologist on one of the Facebook pages I follow, and he was talking about how you need to cut the population down for it to grow. Like he was explaining it, you know, you want to cut the grass, you know, to a certain length. But then my thought was, if you cut it to a certain length, why would you want to then cut it the next day?
Right, exactly.
So that was my rebuttal. I didn't say it to him, but I'm thinking, if you cut it down to a number two, why would you want to cut it to a one the next day?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, that's besides the point.
Yeah.
I mean, I think to what you asked, I think it's definitely adding opportunity to people who can't hunt the later season, but it's an easier season to kill one.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I don't, you know, I'm not a bear hunter, so I don't care. I'm a deer hunter and it bothers me because it messes with my deer hunt. It's a bad timing, right?
Yeah.
As a deer hunter. But number wise, like, man, they imagine how many bears have been wounded in that season, let alone not found, because bears don't bleed very well. They just don't.
No. And I think a lot of people make a mistake because they're deer hunting or they're deer hunters that then go bear hunting.
Mm-hmm.
A bear's vitals are not behind the front shoulder.
Correct.
They're middle.
Are you middle?
They're middle. You want to aim middle on a bear.
Really?
Yep.
I always thought they were farther forward. No. That's why you had to go through that front shoulder.
My dad
shot. A lot of guys shoot him in the shoulder to pin him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's probably because they're hunting in a group, and if it gets to the next guy and he puts it down, he's tagging it. Yeah. Right. So you want to put him down. You that's the way we him. Hunt. I mean, if you so like this year, the bear that I killed, there were four guys. It was my younger brother and myself pushing for my dad and my grandpa, and we just hit this small patch of brush on this hillside, and I heard something go out in front of me, and I yelled, "Hey, something's coming!" Whether it's a deer or bear, I don't know. Something went out in front of me. It didn't sound like a deer. I kind of thought it was a bear. And then all of a sudden I hear, whoom, right down below me, my dad shot. And then he shot again. He goes, "I missed that MF-er." <Run it. laughs> Well, he didn't miss it. He shot it and he hit it low brisket, like front. And it came out and it hit it in the ankle on the right side. And he missed everything. There was nothing there to hit when he hit it through that part like of the no chest man's cavity.
Land, basically.
There's nothing there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can definitely hit too far forward on a on a bear easily because you've got to aim middle.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yep.
But I've always disliked it from an ethical standpoint of and a harvest standpoint. Like, man, we're taking a lot of bears in that early season that we were never doing before. And how many years can you withstand that kind of harvest, like you're saying? How many times can you cut your grass before your grass browns out?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think what you're going to kill in those early seasons more often than not will be sows and cubs. I don't have a problem with people shooting sows. I don't have people shooting cubs. I don't have a problem people shooting jakes or turkeys. So, like, let's get that straight. But as far as what you're going to kill most in those seasons, it's probably going to be sows trying to feed their cubs on the food at that point in time.
Right.
So, I mean, it's up to you as a hunter whether you want to do it or not. Mm-hmm. I would do it. Personally, if I had the opportunity to do it, I'd probably go hunting in October doing it just because it's an opportunity for us to hunt.
Would you adjust the way you hunt for them in that season? Would you hunt them more like deer?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I would look for food. I would look for beech nuts, acorns. Another big thing would be devil's walking sticks.
Mm.
There's they're small purple berries at the top.
Yeah.
And if you see limbs snap down on them.
Yeah, I was just going to say they go in and they'll just snap them.
If you
over.
See a bunch of snapped over, that's a good place to hunt.
Yeah.
We never knew that.
Yeah, we had them behind our house not too long ago. Okay, it was a while back. It was many years ago. Okay. But, relatively speaking, it was for. There should never be a bear behind my house, basically, that way. Like, there's not enough
land. They've been behind my mom's house right here in town.
Yeah, they moved through. They've been caught coming through, but that's how we knew there was a bear there. There was this snap down.
Yep.
And they were all snapped down and pulled together. And
yeah, there's nothing else in the woods going to grab that.
Nothing else is going to do that. Nothing else.
I've seen that before and never really correlated what it was.
That's what, before I even bear hunted, I used to go up with my dad in, we would scout before the season. He used to take off, back before the weekend opener. This is back in the early, mid-2000s. And we used to go walk around thickets that had those devil's walking sticks. And that's what we would look for is either bear scat.
Why do they call them devil's walking sticks?
Because it's got these thorns and all kinds of stuff.
I've always called them devil club.
Yeah. I know. We always called them devil's walking stick.
That's funny. Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
We've always called them devil's club. Yep.
That's so funny.
Dude, the thorns on that thing. Don't accidentally.
Well, I have grabbed them. Yeah. When you fall, when you're pushing a thicket out, and you slip and that you try to grab the nearest tree. Because some of those, they grow up to be, three inches in diameter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They hurt a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Freaking awesome.
I guess this is turning into a bear podcast.
I kind of like it. Like, I know Chuck's like,
we want to get back to turkeys.
At the bit right now with turkeys, but like,
I heard so many birds gobble today, and we're talking about bear right now.
All right, let's go.
I haven't heard any turkeys gobble yet, so I'm still.
I haven't either.
Reeling from bear season.
And my first gobble chain today, like three. I'm pretty sure there was three birds, and they were just gobbling back and forth.
Oh, it was a chain. I didn't know you heard that.
It was a mini one, not like ours, but it was about half of that.
And that was unbelievable that day that we had that.
Yeah, that was really cool. I don't even know how many birds were there. Go ahead. Go piss.
You got it.
We can resume. All right. And we're back.
Pee break.
Little pee break. So gobbling turkeys today. Yeah. I was pretty excited. Had birds gobbling in like five different roost locations today.
That's exciting.
Could you hear them all from the same spot or were you?
Nah, I was driving around. Yeah. I was just driving around shutting the car off, jumping out.
So that's the thing. That's the thing. Do you decide whether you're going to sit and try to pattern? You bounce around all these spots that you're probably not going to get to on the first day, because I've noticed on the first day of turkey hunting, stay at the spot you started at, because it, your backup plan, someone's already there.
Yeah,
that was their plan A.
Yeah. I feel like the place that we go, it's kind of good all day. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. You go in and there's always guys at the parking lots in the morning. You can, like, set your watch to 9:30. Those guys are going to be out. Most of them are gone. You can bounce around. And, man, I don't care what spot you go to. At one point in the day, there's going to be birds there no matter what.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's absolutely insane. The first time I hunted down there, we hunted
right up until
10 different spots before 2 o'clock, and it was like
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. We had birds all day.
All day.
We'd walk. We'd be on a bird. That bird would shut up. We'd walk 100 yards and be on two more birds.
Yeah, those are the fun days.
They're fun, man.
They spoil
so
you,
fun.
Too.
Yeah. They do.
It wasn't until like the last minute that we actually got one that we killed, because all the other ones were being a little stubborn.
Like a 1,200-yard stalk on a bird.
Yeah, it was pretty freaking nuts.
Yeah.
It's not that good anymore as it was back then. There's not
still a lot,
as many birds.
Even last year, dude.
Yeah.
I missed one off the roost.
Yep.
It just got too tight on me. My pattern was too tight. I feel like I shot right past its head. And after that, I mean, we got on, me and Adam, I don't know, 2 or 3 other sets of birds by like 11.
I had one at 20 yards. I had the camera in my hand. Buddy had the gun. He was pointing this way in the open area. And literally, like, through the briar and stuff, the bird just came in straight line at us. And he wasn't expecting, newer turkey hunter, wasn't expecting it. I had him, you know, I literally had a camera there, no gun. I had my gun, but it was laying on the ground. And this bird popped up, hooked set up, turned, went right down over the hill, up the other side. We went around, got in front of him, jumped a bird that he actually shot at and missed, which was crazy, because I don't know why a gobbler was just laying there. I have no idea if someone wounded him. Dude, I have no idea. Big-ass gobbler just jumped up, middle of the field, just took off.
He was just loafing, just sitting there hanging out.
Maybe.
I mean, sometimes when they see you, they just...
I never saw that until probably like 3 or 4 years ago, Chad and I were hunting. And we saw these jakes just sitting there.
Huh.
And we were hanging out. I never saw it. Chad had seen it before. And he said, yeah, they're just loafing.
Hmm. That's what they call it, loafing.
That's what Chad called it. I don't know what the hell it's called, but
yeah.
That's what I call it. Yeah. That's what someone explained to me. So that's
100%. Yeah, I've never seen it like that before.
Yeah.
Bird just sitting in the middle of a high grassy field, jumped up.
Yeah. This was a little field.
Yeah.
That's jumped up
right from, dude, I'm talking from me to you away.
Oh, I haven't seen him that close.
He was.
You sure it wasn't a bearded hen sitting on a nest?
Dude, no. I'm talking giant, big, white, turned red head with a beard. Like, this was a gobbler. This was not a hen on a nest. This was 100% a gobbler.
I feel like any time I've seen them just, like, drop down, it's been like they've seen you or there was a coyote.
Now, mind you, we're talking just horrible conditions.
Yeah.
Windy, nasty, like, something you could easily sneak up on a bird in high grass.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. It was high, like patchy high grass.
He could have just been trying to get out of the wind.
Probably never even knew we were there.
Yeah.
Until I got right up on him. We locked eyes and that fucker jumped up, turned and took off. And again, my guns are on my shoulder. My buddies are like, gobbler, shoot him. Bang, miss. Flies away. I'm like, damn it. But it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun down there. It's definitely a spot where if I took your advice and hunted one spot all day long, probably kill more birds.
Probably, yeah.
I've noticed that. I mean, you always hear, be patient, be patient. Well, I don't have patience in hunting turkeys. Like, you don't realize how many birds I leave that are gobbling, but they're not gobbling the way I want them to gobble. They're not coming in.
So
I'm just like, I'll leave them and I'll go to another spot and hopefully find a better one, because I'd rather just walk around and try to strike a bird and find
them another day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or later that morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've noticed with the amount of people turkey hunting now that most of the time the spot you want to go to next probably has a guy parked at it.
Yeah.
And so, especially the first day of the season, mm-hmm. you better just be impatient, hang out. If you hear a bird, hunt the bird all day.
Yeah.
That would be my advice to anyone who's starting out new turkey hunting. If you hear a bird on the, this only applies to the first day.
Yeah.
Hang out there on public land. If you got a bunch of private land, obviously go bounce around. But if you got a spot on public that gets hunted pretty hard, just hang out there.
It's funny because that's actually kind of how that played. Our first spot was a bust, like pure bust. And I didn't go to the second spot thinking people were going to be there. And when we left the first spot early, because there was some bird within a mile of us, we went to the second spot. Nobody was there. I'm like, how is nobody hunting this right now? We need to go in there. And sure enough, we went in, struck one up with the crow call, and that was the one we had at like 20 yards.
Yeah.
And then if we had just stayed there, we'd been fine. But again, we started moving, chasing gobbles like Austin and I that day. I mean, we were chasing our tails all day long.
All day.
It was like, okay, that bird shut up, but this one over here is gobbling. So we go towards that one. It would just kind of work off, and then another one would start gobbling. Literally, we saw the bird he ended up shooting from across the fields, like he said, like 1,200 yards away. And on the way to it, a bird started gobbling.
We hunted like two or three different birds on the way to that bird.
We hunted them for a little bit, and like you said, you could just tell, like,
they weren't. Something was off. They either had hens or Jake, whatever.
They're not coming. Like, where they're at, they can't even get to us. Okay, let's just go get the bird that we know exactly where he is. He was just with one hen, one gobbler, and one hen.
Wide open.
Big ass field, and he was up on King of the Hill, strutting back and forth.
That's a big
back
bird. And forth.
And then the next year, that field was standing corn.
Yeah, literally.
Could you imagine? Like, but I will say that they might burn them.
That would do that place real good, honestly.
They burned a few years back.
You know, I've heard a lot really about the burning in the South, and a lot of guys are complaining about the timing of when they're burning because it's burning some hens off of nests. So I don't know. I don't know enough about it, but I've heard a lot of guys in the South that I'm friends with on Facebook.
I can understand that.
I've learned and to listen to a lot of, I've listened to a lot of biologists in the South that have debunked that. There's actually been nests that have survived burns in the South. But of all the burns they've done and all the documents that they've made, there's only been a handful of nests that have actually ever been lost.
And they found, though. I mean,
yeah, but we're talking like third nesting that shouldn't even been there.
Do it late, you're saying.
Late, like June nesting. We're talking a bird that has re-nested multiple times that probably wouldn't have survived anyways. Well,
can I give you some perspective on survival of these turkeys? I've killed a bird in the fall that I guarantee you was born in July.
Oh, I'm sure.
I've killed a bird in the fall that was no bigger than the size of a pheasant.
No shit.
Dude,
I swear to God. I mean, it looked like a pheasant.
Yeah, with the amount of time, like...
Tasted great, by the way.
I bet.
With the amount of predation around here and how much, like, dude, I could imagine birds around here nesting 2-3 times easy.
Oh, absolutely.
Consistently.
Yeah.
2-3 times. But the study shows that the burn over time will have such a greater effect than losing a nest or two a year, that overall, like, what it does is...
It creates better habitat.
So much better. And it reduces predators. We talked about it on one of the episodes previously. I was listening to Wild Turkey Science podcast. One of the phenomenal... If you're really into it, you would love that podcast. Those guys,
what's it called?
Wild Turkey Science podcast. Phenomenal. Two biologists from the South. They have a phenomenal podcast. And they were saying how predation goes from plus 70% on these tests to under 10% on places that they burn.
I was thinking sub 20, but under 10.
So it was under 10%.
So what's the logic behind of places in the North not doing it? Obviously, they have their own science as to why they're not doing it.
They just don't freaking burn them.
They just don't.
Yeah, but why?
Resources, money, talk about. So burning in the South has always been a thing. That's what you got to understand. Burning up North has not always been a thing. It's a tradition. It's not a tradition. It's a culture down there. It's something that they've lost down South that they are trying to get back. Like down South used to just be plains. It was all plains. We started planting trees and creating trees and forests and woods. It used to just be all grassland. They had to burn. Natural burns would happen. And then created burns would happen. And that's what created our ecology down there. For years, for hundreds and hundreds of years, that's what happened naturally down South. Mm. Up North, that was never really a thing. And I don't know if it's just because of the bigger timber, the way things are. Like, first off, our stuff doesn't get as thick as it does down there. But I'll tell you right now, the areas like the briar brush and stuff, like the West Virginia places that
yeah.
when they get burned, it makes a huge
difference. There's some places in Tennessee that were pretty impenetrable.
Yeah.
Between the laurel and those the green.
And imagine if they burned little sections of those every year, you know. Just picking little sections and rotating burns throughout a 5-year or 4-year rotation, what it would do to the habitat for turkeys. We talked about this before we hit record about how much habitat has created the loss of turkeys. It's number one.
Yeah. I would say lack of habitat.
It's not even close.
Yeah.
And burning is one of the best things you can do for your turkey habitat. So, like, to say that you might lose a nest or something, first off, the percentage of survival for nests right now are so low. It's amazing that we have turkeys at all.
Yeah.
It's insanely low. So yeah, I don't know, but I know what it would do to take predators out of the equation. You want a nest survival, take raccoons out of the equation, take possums out of the equation, take snakes, take all those out.
But they're always going to be a part of the equation.
But that's what I'm saying. Take them from 70% down to below 10%. How many more turkeys are going to survive? You know what I mean?
I think there's just so many factors that contribute to the turkey population that you're never going to be able to pinpoint which is the most, has the most effect on the turkey population. So you just have to, there has to be, and I don't think we've figured it out yet.
No, we haven't figured it out.
What's going to help the most? Do I think it's getting rid of fall seasons? No. Do I think it's getting rid of second spring tags? No. Do I think it's...
No, because think about...
Trapping thousands of coons?
Yeah.
Just trapping thousands of coons?
No. Right.
There's got to be a cumulative effort.
There needs to be a D all of the above somewhere. And not saying all of the above what you mentioned, but take four things that are really going to help turkeys and do all of them. And that's what's hard.
And see what happens at that point.
Yeah, and where does the funding?
I think there's just too many. There's too many chiefs and not enough Indians, so to speak, when it comes to, you know, whose opinion do we use? Mm-hmm. Because you're going to have biologists from every state, and every state's different.
Sure.
So I don't know.
Yeah. I just the reducing of the tag thing is funny to me because there is such a small percentage of people that are actually harvesting more than one turkey a year that. They have shown time and time and time again studies that the amount of turkey that you can take and reducing that has not helped population at all, has shown no change. Take a state like Oklahoma that's gone from three or four birds to one, has shown zero change. It has not affected their population whatsoever over the last 3 years since we've been there. Has not. It continues to get hurt and go down.
It's something else.
It's more to it. Point. There's just so much more to it. You can't just say, okay, like the knee-jerk reactions of all these states, like closing, like Nebraska. We're just not going to have, we're going to have a limited amount of out-of-state hunters this year. We're just going to cut it off. We're going to lower your amount that you can kill. None of that's really helping, but I get it because at least they're trying. They're putting an effort for it.
But well, that was the thing back in the day. It used to be, for Pennsylvania anyway, you used to only be able to hunt in the fall.
Yeah, it was just fall turkey.
So let's think about it. What's the only upland game bird that we hunt in the spring during mating season?
You're going to bring it up. It's the turkey.
Okay.
Yeah.
I made this comparison on, I think it might have been the Pennsylvania Game Commission's Facebook page.
You did. I've read it.
I said something about why don't we hunt grouse in the spring?
You get a lot of shit for those comments, by the way, from people on there that are, you know.
I didn't read them.
Good. But, don't.
but think about it. You have a bird that is susceptible to West Nile, and you know predators, the same ground nest predators that a turkey would. But you're hunting them, you know, in the fall, and the population continues to go down. You're not even hunting them in the spring.
Yeah.
So why aren't we hunting the grouse in the spring and not the fall? Or you know, there's no. Good correlation as to the reasoning as to why some people want to get rid of fall turkey hunting, keep spring, but then the same people that want to do that are shooting other upland birds that are pretty similar. I would say a grouse and a turkey are pretty dang similar.
Well, the habitat and everything is.
Yeah.
It's very, I mean, very their similar. Behaviors are similar.
Yeah,
they're not flock birds, but
right.
I mean, they're same nesting, you know, same predation, same plus grouse has West Nile, but yet we're shooting males and females in the fall.
Yeah.
And no one raises a stink about it.
Yeah, which
so
I gotta be honest too. When you pull up on a grouse, are you checking to see if it's a male or female?
I've never killed. I'd love to kill one. I never killed one.
I don't really hunt grouse.
I've never hunted them.
There was one place that I used to deer hunt all the time. I saw grouse all the time, and then they just fell off. It was like I would see 10 in a day,
mm-hmm.
kicking them up, seeing them running through the timber and everything, and then yeah. just never saw them again. They just disappeared.
We used to see them pretty commonly up our camp, and any more in the last few years.
When was the last time you saw one?
I couldn't tell you.
I saw several. I mean, I can't say I haven't seen a bunch, because I have. Where I've been hunting, I've been seeing a good amount.
Well,
I mean,
you put
but
10 or 12 miles a day, too. You might see some.
Yeah. Well, but I don't know what good grouse hunting it used to be either. So, because I can't say I've never grouse hunted.
I can tell you one thing. Regardless, there isn't an upland bird that's doing well right now. Naturally.
There's no quails. There's no pheasants. There's stocked pheasants.
Pheasants are stocked. Yeah. If you want to kill a pheasant in Pennsylvania, they're stocked. They're kicked out of a box somewhere.
But even if you look out west, like even like Wyoming and stuff like that, like the sage grouse, mm-hmm. they're having a hell of a time.
Yeah.
And it's habitat.
It's habitat.
You know what you see more now too than you used to see? Birds of prey.
Oh, totally.
And what do you think they feed on? I mean, there's just so many. There's two, like we said. There's too many variables that factor right. into the populations of these other animals. That
are you suggesting we should shoot bald eagles? Just kidding. Don't answer that question.
No. Here, let me spin one back to you. If there was a season for it, would you?
I wouldn't.
Only at night with machine guns.
I wouldn't hunt with bald eagles.
With I drones.
God help me. I don't think I could hunt any bird of prey.
Why?
Hawks, eagles. I've always had a thing for birds. I always thought they were really cool. Like,
I gotta be honest.
Do you think a hawk tastes much different than a turkey?
Yeah, I would. I don't think they'd be nearly as good.
The numbers could be reduced, and you would.
They're always flying though. Like turkeys fly very.
Ducks fly a lot, and people eat them.
Yeah, but they're not as good as turkey.
Oh, debatable.
Oh, come on. Ooh, a turkey debatable. Breast versus a duck breast.
I could make you.
Yeah, but. No.
I bet I can
make
you.
I had to say I'm with Chuck on this. Turkey breast is the reason Dude. That everyone takes vacation to go up and fall turkey hunt, because we have a big turkey fry.
Yeah. So good.
I feel like I could cook you some ducks and you'd question
I don't,
that.
I don't disagree with you. You could cook ducks really well.
Oh, they're good, dude.
But also, I don't
that
know.
That fat cap on there, get a nice hard sear on it.
And
nice medium
shoot,
rare.
Like 15 to get to a turkey size.
I'm not debating that, but there's, I mean, and ducks are having a hard time in certain places too.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's weather dependent. Yeah. If you had a good duck shoot and you hunted a couple of times, because there are liberal limits on them,
mm-hmm.
you had a good cook, you'd be a happy man.
It
kind of
pisses me off, though, that they're doing a lot more for duck habitat and that kind of thing. And really, these waterfowl that they're doing a lot for waterfowl in Pennsylvania that they're not doing for turkeys.
There's more waterfowl organizations than there are for turkey. When you think of turkey organizations, you think of NWTF.
TFT.
But where is WTF? So that's, I think it's easy to see where the duck is. It's you have to buy a federal stamp to hunt them. It's you're getting assistance from the federal government.
Totally.
The federal government is protecting the wetlands.
Yeah. 100%.
You know, either at a federal level or a state level.
Yeah. It pisses me off.
So, I mean, look, it's easy to see why ducks are having better success population than upland birds.
Yeah, nobody's worried about ducks right now. Nobody's saying we're not going to have ducks to hunt in 10 years.
Not true.
What you ducks are we going to?
You're mistaken.
I don't duck hunt enough to
I don't
have
either.
A stake in this
I conversation.
Don't
either, but
I don't duck hunt a ton anymore.
I don't either, but I'm not hearing it.
I love hunting ducks, probably, but the mallard limit keeps going down. I will tell you that.
Yeah.
It's down. I mean, it used to be at some places it's still five, but I mean, it's not that way anymore, man.
I understand the limits and stuff are decreasing, but
because the populations are going down, a lot of the ducks are
really
on the downswing.
Worried that there's going to be no mallards in 10 years.
Some people are, yeah.
They're crazy. I can go kill one at the school pond any day of the week.
Those are tame.
They're wild animals.
No, they're not.
They do not get raised in a pen. They're wild.
We're getting away from the point here. I'm making the correlation with it, but at the same time, I like hunting both ducks and turkeys. Honestly,
let's face it though, too. We've made killing turkeys way easier for people too.
Totally.
Look at TSS.
Oh my God.
You can shoot birds up to 60 yards easy.
Mm-hmm. Farther
and
than
then
that.
I don't know what makes turkeys do it, but they totally lose their mind when they see one of those strutter decoys.
Yeah.
And you can get away with moving and you know, everything with those. Those have made killing turkeys so much easier. So
yeah. Can you like reap in Ohio?
Would you reap?
No.
Would you? No. Yeah. We kind of feel the same way.
But mainly, I don't want to get shot.
I don't either.
And I have more fun calling to them. That's my terrifying why I like turkey, and I like turkey hunting probably the most of anything, is the interaction.
Oh, I love seeing them work.
So personally, I wouldn't reap for those two reasons.
Yeah. I've put full fan decoys out before, and I've had split kind of reactions to them. I've had birds run away from them, and I've had birds come in like they were going to fight them.
My buddy Colton down in Tennessee had one of those strutter decoys, and I watched these birds do the dumbest thing to come in, and I shot the bird, and I was like, well, that like almost too easy. Yeah. Like it didn't feel fair.
Yeah.
I could see that.
There was like two or three hens and a long beard, and those hens came running over.
Oh yeah.
And he came running over, and you know, it almost like was like one of those too good to be true video hunts.
Did you have to call very much?
I called to get their attention.
Right. And but that was it.
But then they were probably, we were in one of those burns. Mm. We were in a burn, and right in the middle of a burn, this big cut that was burnt. And had we not had that strutter decoy, there's no way those turkeys were coming over to where we were.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No way.
That's interesting.
Seen them work that way. I could have done it legally in South Dakota, but there ain't no way in hell I was carrying one around.
No.
That's the main thing with the way I hunt. Like, there's no way I'm carrying a sack of decoys.
Do you hunt with decoys at all?
Occasionally. Yeah, I mean, there's a spot in Ohio where I hunt where I only have permission to hunt this field. Mm-hmm. So if I go and walk down the edge of this field and try to call the birds out of the woods,
you need to draw them to something.
What are they going to come out in the field if they come out and sit there 20 yards off the edge of the field and say, well, there ain't nothing out there.
They don't see anything. Yeah.
You know, so like you kind of get handcuffed into certain times. But, and you know, another time I tried using them was with Chad when I started hunting with him. I used them up in the big woods trying to see if they would just hang out in front of the camera a little better. But that, I mean, they don't.
I don't like using them in the timber. The only time that I like using them is open, like you were just talking about. I feel like just from personal experience, having decoys out in the timber, almost every time I've had birds come in and I've had decoys out, they booger.
Yeah.
They just don't like it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that too, I like working the birds, and when they don't see something and they come in looking for it and they get curious, and that's just something that...
Usually I set up for them to be within range when they pop into sight. So when they come in and they're looking like, hey, there should be a hen here, it's too late
for them
because I can already shoot them.
Yeah. Right.
But if I give them, you know, if they're 70 yards in and or 70 yards away and they can look over and, hey, there's no hen over there.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a very good setup. You should have had a better setup.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes tough to do. Like
I don't disagree.
Yeah. Reference the big woods up by my camp. There's some of them hardwoods before it greens up. You can see for 300 yards. Where do you hide? Where do you?
That's why I don't take my vacation until the middle of May, because it's not, to me, the way I hunt, it's easier for me to go up later in the season. Obviously, most birds are going to be killed by then, but I have more fun hunting when there's cover and you can move around on birds.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Or move birds and get them into a position, like you said, where you can kill them without them looking at
when
100
they
yards.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
opening day...
You can see 300 yards down through the woods on opening day. Most places that
I
hunt.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So if you don't have, like you said, if you don't have decoys, which I am not carrying on the first day usually.
Yeah.
Which also, when it's open like that, it's hard to get in the position that you need to be in when it's that open, because they're going to see you from the roost.
You can't even dark. Even when they're on the ground. I mean, they can see you coming or getting set up.
Totally.
That screwed us last year. It was Boo and I. It was like either first day or first week or something. It was early in the season, like one of the first days. And we had three birds. I roosted. And, dude, they were hammering. They come down like 100 yards away. And they literally just strutted back and forth the whole time at 100 yards. And we're sitting there and we're stuck because they can see us. Like, clear as day, they can see us. We had a Jake decoy out, but I think it was, for whatever reason, they weren't seeing it. They were not committing. Well, here in the whole madness, we called another bird in from a different direction, which we could hear him gobbling and he was kind of closing. But it was like, how do we move? Because we got these birds that are in the wide open watching us. Do we booger them up that we know are, you know, they get into like 80 yards and then they go back out to 100, get to 80, go back out to 100. It's like, what do we do? Next thing you know, bird to our right, appears out of nowhere, quiet, 30 yards, looks up, busts us on the side of a tree at these birds, takes off running. We're like, oh, shit, that kind of sucked. Well,
that's
next
tough.
Time. And then, sure enough, we call another bird in from behind us, fifth bird, and these three are still full stride out in front of us, and we get a bird coming in behind us and walks out 20 yards. He tries to swing, busts it, gone. So those birds never came
you,
in, by
did
the
you
way.
Hunt there from... Right off the bat?
Right off the roost.
And you heard all those birds in the trees?
Yep.
So I think...
But the two that were... Dude, the two that came in, I kid you not, I bet you they were almost damn near a quarter mile away. Wow. Like, you could barely hear their gobble. Like, you could tell there was a bird out there, but they were way out there. And up there, you can hear forever.
Yeah.
Like, we're in pretty flat stuff, too. Like, you can hear forever. And those birds, when they hit the ground, we couldn't hear them gobbling until they started closing the distance. And they came and came and came and came. We should have just got moved, honestly. We should have got around the tree and set up
a little bit better. Yeah.
You know what I've noticed, too, a lot up there is, I mean, this isn't even up there. It's everywhere. You'll hear one bird, but there might be more birds there. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that every morning turkeys wake up and they gobble.
Right.
And that's not the case. Like, if you go to a spot and you don't hear birds, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not in there. Mm-hmm. They just didn't gobble that morning.
Right.
And some birds are lower on the pecking order, and they got beat up by the bird that's gobbling. There might be two other birds there that aren't gobbling.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen that a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a thing that people, especially when they're scouting, they're like, well, I only heard one bird in that whole hollow.
Right.
Well... There's probably three. A lot more than that one bird in that hollow. It's just one boss gobbler.
That's extremely, extremely important and true of a statement, because I couldn't tell. Like, the one, we would hunt this one property where the birds would roost the same spot every time. It's a smaller area. They would literally, there was two, maybe two spots they could roost on that property, but they were always there. A bunch of hens, gobblers, everything. The main gobbler gobbled.
Yeah.
The subordinate one didn't. The freaking Jakes, they didn't gobble. He gobbled. When they came in, there was like six Jakes and two gobblers, but you heard one bird gobble all morning. Like, you would never know if you just heard the one bird gobble and like, let's go find something else or whatever. You know, who would leave a gobbling bird? I don't know. Crazy people, I guess. But like Kyle.
Call me crazy.
Yeah, crazy Kyle. But it happened... I mean, I've had it happen a bunch of times, and you're right. Like, who knows how many birds there?
There's been times of a totally different scenario. Even there's been plenty of times where a spot that I turkey hunted for years, just knowing how the way that this place set up and everything, you could go the evening before and put the birds to bed, gobbling their heads off. They'd hammer at a crow call. They'd hammer if you were just cutting on a slate.
Yep.
They would hammer at an owl hoot, but never fail. You'd go in there that morning. Quiet, quiet, quiet. Wouldn't gobble on the roost, nothing. If you just sat there, those birds would come in every single time. And if you weren't an experienced turkey hunter and you went in there that morning and you started calling, you're not going to hear anything. You'd be like, you'd go. But if you sat there, those birds would work their way in.
And depending on the terrain, too, there's been times where you think you should be able to hear the bird, but it's just down off of an edge where you can't, and the way the sound goes... That has happened to me countless times, and you know, people that I know, I didn't hear it on the roost, but I called it in, after it flew down. I don't know where it was, but
I couldn't tell you how many times just sitting on opposite ends of trees people
being able to
the
hear
the same tree, and I can hear a bird gobbling, and they can't.
Yep.
That's happened a bunch of times, especially when you start talking about topography and stuff like hills. West Virginia's that is so good for that. Like, you could sit 10 feet higher and see and hear a whole different bird group and a different roost. Like, we were 40 yards apart, me, friend and I, and just where I was at, probably because of the way the hill laid, I could hear birds gobbling on the roost across, and he was 40 yards in front of me, never heard a bird. Like, I'm like, what do you mean you didn't hear turkeys? There's like, and I'm wondering, because we're just sitting there in the spot where we thought the birds were going to be roosting, there was no birds there. But I'm sitting there listening to birds just gobbling their faces off, and he's not moving, doing nothing. What's this guy doing? Like, it's his hunt, right?
Yeah.
Does he want to move towards the birds that are gobbling? He get up, walked over finally. I'm like, they're not here. He's like, I don't think they're here. I'm like, I've been listening to three birds gobble across the ridge
See, now that's
all
why,
morning.
Yeah. See, if I'm hunting with someone, I always tell them right away, because I had that happen before, and I'm like, hey, there's birds over here. Because like you said, if you're sitting and there's a tree at your back, there's a good chance you're not going to hear the bird that's back behind you.
Yeah, you're just assuming that they're hearing what you're hearing. And like, okay, maybe they're just being patient. I don't know.
That's why I don't like at daybreak. If I'm just going in to listen to a spot, I don't like getting near a tree. I like standing, you know, obviously, if you know that there might be birds roosted above you,
you gotta be
you're going to want to be close to a tree. But if you're just going to a spot where you want to listen from, give yourself some room to catch the sound.
That's good.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I can just think of so many years like when I couldn't hear at all. Because I don't know if you know or not, I'm deaf as shit.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I have hearing aids now. I can actually hear birds. But for like the longest time, if I was hunting with him or I was hunting with another buddy that I turkey hunted with for years, I like relied on him to like hear the birds for me.
Yeah.
Because I had to be like pretty damn close to hear them. And I can't think of how many times, because I hunt alone a lot.
Yeah.
Can't think of how many times I was walking ridges trying to strike birds. Never heard any.
They were probably following you out of the woods to your truck.
You never know. You never know. But it's just one of those things. Like,
yeah. That's what my grandpa was like. I didn't hear anything at that spot. And I'm like, well, I'll go check tomorrow.
Yeah.
That was a fun topic from a podcast I was listening to the other day. They were talking about how the older generation, all they want to talk about is how there ain't no turkeys around no more. And there ain't this, there ain't that. They used to gobble 100 times off the roost. And it's like, are they just too old and deaf to hear them anymore?
They might be.
Or they're hearing those birds that were quarter mile away up the mountains, and now they're not. They're hearing the ones that are 100 yards away, you know? And that was a good topic. I was like, you know, that
it is a good topic because I used to hear great. I had a really sharp decline on my hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear now, luckily.
Yeah.
But I mean, even last year, having hearing aids for the first year, I could hear birds, but like,
or before that, guys,
it makes me really wonder how many more birds I would have killed had I been able to hear.
Right. Or the same guys talking about there ain't no deer anymore. The guys that used to go 600 yards off the road, now they're old and they don't want to go more than 100 yards off the road.
Yeah.
They don't see any deer.
That too.
Well, you know? I shouldn't say I used to. A couple years ago, I was hunting at a parking lot.
Parking lots can be solid, dude.
I had to park at a different spot because the deer were crossing. I could see their cars coming down the road, and this is up in the big woods, and I was hunting where the deer go.
John shot one out of a parking lot probably 2 years ago.
Think about guys like Dan Enfault. Yeah. Talking about guys going way back in, overlooking those smaller, you know, places right
next to them. You just got to go where the deer are.
Where the deer
are. It doesn't matter.
And that's where the deer were. Miles back right or next to them.
20 yards off the road.
Yeah.
If every time I drive into my I've been saying it since we've had that camp. How many years? Hunt the damn road. Dude, I'll be honest. How many times I've seen deer on the roads, middle of day, hunting hours. Now,
there's enough of those guys.
Trucks the all over the place.
You don't know about.
I'm talking archery hunting the roads. Like, I'm not talking deer.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just rifle. Nobody's doing it. I'm telling you, nobody's doing it. Finally, John hunted right off the road in that little parking area and killed a deer. And I'm like, I told you guys. The damn roads, okay? The deer cross them all the time.
How all the time.
Freaking deer tracks you got on the roads, too. I almost shot a turkey off the road one day, not too long ago. I think it was last spring, not off the road.
You better clarify that these roads are...
Yeah, that's
these
true.
These are roads you can shoot on. These are not highway roads.
Yeah.
I was on Interstate 80.
That's a great point, Kyle. Yeah, these are definitely roads that you... You could shoot across.
You can set up and shoot a turkey on.
Yeah.
Like legally.
Yes, legally. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. It was not a paved road. I had, dude, those birds, I couldn't tell you how far. That was the farthest I've ever heard a bird gobble. I had to jump up on a rock and listen really close. And I'm like, am I hearing shit? Or is there really a bird gobbling right? And I went like 300-400 yards farther and I couldn't hear anything. I'm hearing shit. Well, then I got back up again to a higher spot and I heard them gobble again. I'm like, dude, those things had to be close to 1,000 yards away up there. And it's like, that's freaking far.
That's far.
It was an old clear cut, you know, and I could hear across it pretty good. And I was like, I tracked them all the way.
Some of those places where you get on those high spots, you can see, you know,
forever.
A mile or 3 miles out.
forever.
And if there's no wind, or if the wind's blowing to you from those places,
it carries that sound.
Yeah, it'll carry that sound.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. It was just the perfect storm, and I ended up getting within 50 yards of those birds. But some guy, I'm guessing somebody drove by, saw him feeding on the edge of that little roadway, and I think they probably dropped their buddy off down the road because I heard someone come in.
Yeah,
calling. I know exactly what hunt you're talking about.
Yeah, oh, man, I was so disappointed. Those birds were. They were right there.
Did he spook them or just competition or they kind of boogered?
I think they just got boogered up. They weren't interested anymore. Yeah. They just kind of worked off.
The hens probably. So I think I've noticed that with that, like if there's competition, the hens will just take the gobbler.
Yeah, that's what they did.
Away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The gobblers were gobbling. I mean, they were talking a lot, but then there was another vehicle would come down there. I don't know why guys do that. Like they do a lot of road hunting up there, obviously. You know.
I know more than you know.
I don't know if you know more than I know, Kyle. I'm a little older than you. Seen it plenty of times, but it was like that one last vehicle and then that guy calling and just over calling. They got tired of it. And I physically watched them feed and just work into a big giant old clear cut.
Yeah.
They just went, disappeared.
Yeah.
Lost them forever.
Kyle, we are an hour and 30 minutes into this. Is there something that you wanted to talk about we haven't brought up yet?
A story?
Yeah, we haven't got a story out of him yet.
No, we haven't.
I thought I told a bear story.
We haven't had a bear story. No, you didn't actually tell a bear story.
I did tell a turkey story and a bear story. Hmm. What do you want the story to be about?
Turkey.
Turkey.
Duh.
Have we had you tell your favorite turkey story of all time on here? I feel like we probably.
See, I feel like I get asked like these questions and I feel like I give a different answer every time because, I mean, you can't pick a favorite. It's hard to pick a favorite. I mean, I could tell you the story from last spring. It was my fourth Grand Slam.
Yeah, man.
Perfect.
And Chad got it on film. Pretty cool. We hunted this bird in the morning and we worked it all morning. And
this is a bird that you struck up that morning or did you find it the night before?
We knew it was in there and we hunted it and it wasn't in the spot we thought it was. And we got over to it and we think it maybe had a hen with it, but we it was gobbling like crazy. And, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, shut up and it'll come in. Well, sometimes, you know, a bird is not going to do that. Mm-hmm. If you shut up, it's not going to come in. And mostly what you want to do is keep it gobbling so you can position yourself to get close to it. Because if you can get close to it, it's going to be like, okay, well, it's only 50 yards away. I'm going to go check that noise out, that hen out. So that's kind of what we were trying to do. So we kept calling to it and trying to position. Finally, we got like maybe 55, 60 yards from it. And I bumped it. Like I got too close. So we left there and we went back to the camp and ate lunch and took a nap. And there was this spot I wanted my dad to drop us off at, and we parked the truck at one end and he dropped us off at another, and he's like, I'm going back to camp, cook dinner, and because this is when you could hunt all day.
Yep. Yeah,
that old May.
Yeah.
So Chad and I go walking up in there and I was telling him how my great grandpa used to deer hunt back in this spot all the time, and I said, you know, I got my third Grand Slam back in here. I capped it off. I shot a bird on the first day, and Chad, it'd be pretty cool if you did it again. We're walking back in there and I make a call and we thought we heard a bird gobble. It was like way off or it was real muffled, you know, leaves were on and stuff. So we stopped and we're standing there listening and I make another call and I'm like, that was for sure a gobble. And it was a little bit closer, maybe walk like a little bit back 15, 20 yards towards it and call again. And now you could tell that bird's on its way to us. So we're scrambling now. We head up into off this little gas well road. We head up into the woods and we get up onto this little bench. So the turkey now is down below us. So it's like kind of perfect. You know, we're set up above it. Mm-hmm. It's going to wrap around the bench below us. And if it wants to come take a look, it's going to wrap around and come up and be within 25, 30 yards. And that's exactly what it did.
Ooh.
Ooh. Love when that happened.
Yeah. It was totally cool. I mean, it was, the leaves were real crunchy. You could hear this turkey walking from 100 yards away. Like, It was like a picture perfect hunt. Yeah. It was like, I feel like it was like 5 o'clock in the afternoon too. And this bird come in screaming. It had a hen and a jake with it. And then the hen yelped a few times and you could hear him coming up and spitting, drumming. And yeah, it was pretty sweet. And then when he came up, you know, when you get in a situation like that, you don't have very long to make your decision whether you're going to shoot it or not. So, right. Yeah, he popped his head up, and I saw the beard, and I saw the head, and I was like, well, it's now or never. So I shot, and I saw two other turkeys take off flying, and I was like, well, that's good, because the one I was shooting at didn't fly. And I walked over there, and yeah, he was flopping right there.
Nice.
Yep. That was a pretty cool feeling. I mean, and I remember leaving camp the following day. I mentioned to my dad, because my wife was 8 months pregnant. I was like, man, I know I'm going to have a kid next year. I said, the odds of me getting another grand slam are probably pretty slim. And my dad goes, you never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
You never know.
And the very next year, this year,
here we are.
It's lined up again. All I need is a spring turkey.
Unreal, man.
I know. It's wild. But like I said, there's always been team effort. And yeah. Every one of these grand slams has been... There's been someone with me, someone helping me along the way.
Yeah.
I just find it crazy. Like, there's guys that hunt everything in Pennsylvania year in, year out. They've never even been that close to it. You've got five. Well, you're coming up on five.
Yep.
Dude, that's impressive.
I'm batting 500, 5 in 10 years if I get this one in the spring.
That's pretty good odds.
What have you been hunting for 10 years? Bear?
Well, I'm just saying from 2000. The first year I got one, first year I got a grand slam.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, five within 10 years. Yeah,
that's why when you said 10 years, I was thinking 10 total. That's why I was thinking you obviously you've been hunting deer for longer than 10 years, turkey longer than
if you want to get technical with it, I should have 8 grand slams. There was 2 bear. The first 2 years I bear hunted, I missed 2 bear that we ended up getting. And another bear I didn't get a shot at. It was 60 yards away from me. That would have probably been my biggest bear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get a shot at it through the brush. I'd pick my gun up, I couldn't get a shot.
Is it always the bear that holds you back, or has there ever been a year that you missed a grand slam and it was not the bear?
No.
Ooh, yeah. Good question. Good question.
No. And it's to a certain extent, it starts to get stressful, if that makes sense. Like, when you get your bear, like, the bear is probably the hardest.
Oh, right.
So when you get your bear, you're like, and you don't have your buck yet, you're like, man, I better shoot straight rifle season.
I got to buckle down.
Oh, yeah, man. Anything legal is going down.
Yeah.
It's not in to be at that point where you still got to shoot a buck and rifle too. That ain't always easy to
do. No, that's tough.
Well, that's why last year, that's how I was. I had a rifle hunt, and I was, man, if I kill a bear and don't kill a buck, like, I'm going to be kind of mad at myself.
Uh-huh.
So my little brother killed a buck that opening morning, and my dad and my grandpa were going over, and he was just across the hollow from me, and I could hear them on the radio. They were, talking about where they were at and getting out, and I'm standing down at the bottom of this hill, and then this buck comes down chasing a doe, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Right down to me, I shot it, and they could hear all the shooting going on, and they knew that was me down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I could hear him, that was Kyle. I said, all I need is a spring turkey, I said on the radio. Do you need help getting that buck out? I sure, well, I had, yeah, I let's put it this way. I needed a lot of help getting that one out.
It was a bad spot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's typically where you need to go if you're going to kill one.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah.
In rifle season. That's awesome, man.
Yep. But that's like getting back to the whole camaraderie thing. Like, we hunt like wolves. If you really want to, if you want to compare it to something, like, we have no fear of what where we're going to go, because you're going to have help to get whatever you're getting out.
Yeah. My buddy Sam has always said, kill the deer. We'll figure out how to get them out.
Yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
He's always said that. And because I've told him before, like, we were way back in, there was a doe across this creek. Like, it's a big, deep creek. I'm not going to just cross this thing. And I just let it walk. And he's like, next time, pull the trigger. We'll figure out how to get that deer out. Yeah. I'm like, no. Buddy, we're like a mile and a half back.
If our group could get a 900-pound bear out,
you
could get anything out of the woods.
I love that story,
it's kind of the extent of what's worth it or not. Right?
Yeah.
Is a little 80-pound doe worth it, or is a 900-pound trophy bear worth it? Because that's worth it to me.
You cut that lady up and you throw her in a backpack and you go like hell.
Huh, anymore I would, yeah. Back then I didn't have this resource. Anymore I'd definitely do that. Pack them up in a heartbeat.
Oh,
gonna
yeah.
Do that a lot more.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. A lot
more. I wish we'd have done that on a few deer.
You ain't kidding, bud.
Yeah.
Yep. I think if there was a lot more camaraderie and less selfishness and greediness in hunting in general.
Yeah.
It'd be a lot better, you know.
It's atmosphere. Tough to, like, let's be honest, a lot of hunting, archery hunting, should say, it's pretty selfish. It's a lot of one-on-one time.
It is.
It's a lot of one-on-one time with you and nature and a tree. To an extent, it does get that way. You know, and if you're after something, if you're trying to chase and kill big animal or mature animals, it can be tough to accomplish that, you know, with people. That's why I like being at camp. Even if we're all going our separate ways and hunting different spots, you're all coming back to the camp.
Or you're going to help each other get whatever you get out.
You're tracking deer for this person, for that person. You're dragging deer out for this person. You know, two or three people might be over here. Two or three people might be over here helping this person. At the end of the day, you all come back to one camp, one fire, telling stories. That's what it's all about.
And I think too many people miss out on that. Mm. Like, if you grew up hunting and the only hunting you knew was, I have to get this big buck this year or it was a failure. I think that is probably the worst mentality to have hunting.
I would agree.
It should be more about you and your family and friends' successes than it is about just getting that one trophy animal.
Yeah. And gaining that experience and learning.
Yeah,
I mean,
think about it. Yeah, you're gonna have these stories. Every time you go, like, you know, you go see these family and friends, you're gonna have those stories that you're gonna talk about. Forever.
Yeah, totally.
And now you're carrying a camera and you'll be able to watch them with those friends and family.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
Good way to circle that back.
That's right. Well, Cowboy, we didn't get to argue about anything on this one. It's unfortunate.
Next time.
How do you feel about double barrel crossbows?
Jesus. I wish they would add a third. A triple barrel.
Triple stacker.
Triple stack.
Oh, man. Let's wrap this thing up.
I got you,
Kyle. Buddy. Appreciate you, buddy.
Yep. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm glad we got to finally do one in person.
Heck yeah. Thanks for coming in, staying up late with us.
Yep.
It's a school night, so.
I know.
Yeah.
It's all right. We all need to sleep.
We do. Go ahead and shout out A&F again, man. Tell them where they can find them, everything, all that fun stuff.
You can find us on Instagram or Facebook, A&F Custom Calls, or our website, www.anfcustomcalls, and we're selling calls, $8.99 a call plus tax and shipping. And like I said, be on the lookout for us dropping that new Honky Hen. I'm kind of excited about it. It's pretty good.
I can't wait. Edge. Also, I've been telling people just kind of if they order from Instagram or Facebook, just let them know we sent you just to see if you know, give them a little something on this.
Yeah, we'll get them.
So, just make sure you take care of my mum boys, okay?
Oh, I got you.
I appreciate that. I was like, I'm pretty sure he was doing free shipping for him. My buddy's like, well, I ordered online and it said free shipping. I was like, all right, yeah, you got it. It's like, you got it. Don't worry.
That's hilarious.
All right, Cowboy. Thanks again, man.
Yep. Always a pleasure.
For sure. Austin, you got anything?
No, man.
All right.
Until next week.
The distraction is real.